watched this over and over, the creeping cancer of the federal government overreaching.
Battling a proposed monument the Obama administration has shown no signs it's considering. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, September 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Juneau residents rally for Planned Parenthood.
So you have senior citizens that are well past reproductive age out here trying to support the cause.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Alaska Congressman Don Young and other Republicans on the House Natural Resources Committee this morning attacked the idea that President Obama might create a marine national monument to protect the Aleutian Islands with unknown effects on the fishing industry. But as APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, the administration has given no sign it's considering the notion.
Congressman Young, at a subcommittee hearing, said that a marine national monument around the Aleutians would be terrible for the fishing industry.
I watched this over and over, the creeping cancer of the federal government overreaching. The worst managers of any resource is the federal government. They do not manage, they preclude.
The idea of protecting the waters of the Aleutian chain came from environmentalist and retired UAA professor Rick Steiner. Last year, he proposed a massive marine sanctuary covering all of the federal waters of Bristol Bay and thousands of miles of the Bering Sea. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration killed the idea, saying it lacked local support. That seemed to be the end of it, except that Steiner launched an online petition telling President Obama he should create an Aleutian National Monument instead. Under the Antiquities Act, the president can just declare a monument on his own. Steiner's plea to Obama on thepetitionsite.com has attracted more than 100,000 supporters, many from foreign countries. Steiner was not invited to the hearing to defend his idea. Chris Oliver, director of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, was an invited witness. He says his council is doing a fine job preserving Bering Sea resources, including fish habitat, in part because it is closing vast areas to fishing.
We have 1.3 million square nautical miles that we manage, and two-thirds of that area, about 665,000 square miles of it, is closed to all or most fishing activities.
The top Democrat on the Water, Power, and Oceans Subcommittee, Jared Huffman of California, says the fist shaking and the mobilized defense are unnecessary.
We do a lot of straw man chasing here in the committee. We will hear rumors and sometimes even concoct threats towards industries and then have entire hearings that are about knocking down those straw men.
Huffman then turned to the only administration witness, Holly Bamford, an acting assistant secretary at NOAA.
To your knowledge, is the administration considering a national monument designation in the Aleutians?
I have not been part of those discussions.
Yeah.
To my knowledge, no.
And I've seen no evidence of it either.
It's not clear that a marine monument would be closed to commercial fishing. Bamford says that would depend on the management plan. The president's power to protect areas of land and water by declaring them national monuments disturbs the Alaska delegation to Congress. They've proposed bills to curtail that authority. One by Young would ban any marine national monument off Alaska's shores. At the hearing, Young denied the threat to the Aleutians is a political figment, and he predicted the administration will declare monument status for the area.
They say this is, you know, it's a straw man baloney. I know when they propose something that's going to be attempted by.
Asked about the president's intentions for the Aleutians, a White House spokeswoman said she has no announcements to make at this time. As for Steiner, he still says Alaska's federal waters deserve some form of permanent protection, but he got no response from the White House to his petition. He says he did meet with one administration official this spring who advised him not to expect such bold action. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A crowd gathered in the drizzle on the Capitol steps in Juneau today to show their support for Planned Parenthood. In recent weeks, Republican lawmakers in Congress have tried to strip the organization of its federal funding. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Rallygoers clutched signs that said, "Have your children by choice, not chance. Grandpa support Planned Parenthood." And of course, a sign too. Dave Sturdivant borrowed his wife's hot pink scarf for the rally. He blends in into a sea of pink shoes, t-shirts, and knitted hats that the crowd of about 30 was encouraged to wear.
It's about 90%, let's say, senior citizens like myself. So you have senior citizens that are well past reproductive age out here trying to support the cause.
There are four branches of Planned Parenthood in Alaska. The clinic provides STD and cancer screenings for men and women, pap smears, sex education, and LGBT services. And yes, some provide abortions. Planned Parenthood has been in the headlines lately because of a video that surfaced showing affiliates discussing the harvest of aborted fetal parts. And conservative Republicans are using the controversy to justify defunding federal dollars. Jessica Bogard skipped her lunch break to attend the rally.
Today is important because the decisions being made have a deadline and a vote. And so we need to make our opposition to the decisions being made to unfund or defund Planned Parenthood known today.
A bill to defund Planned Parenthood failed to get enough votes in the Senate. But a potential government shutdown is looming if lawmakers can't come to an agreement in the House. Last week, Alaska's U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski voted against a bill to defund Planned Parenthood. And she said she doesn't support a government shutdown. She was one of eight Republicans to vote against the bill. Bogard says she's happy the senator voted with the Dems.
But I don't think it's a party issue, it's a health issue. And if you view it that way, then the decision is clear, you keep funding Planned Parenthood.
A woman in an SUV drives by the rally and rolls down her window. If you didn't catch that, she shouted, "No government funding for private business." The crowd quiets for a minute before the chanting picks back up. Amanda Kraft says she thinks most of the reaction to the rally has been positive.
Maybe only just a couple people have either not waved or just not looked. Maybe one or two stink eyes, but that's okay. That's all right.
Kraft leads the next chant. She says she came up with it on the fly. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Representatives from across the circumpolar north are meeting this week in Fairbanks for the Arctic Energy Summit. The meeting, which last happened in 2013 in Iceland, has drawn representatives from countries including Canada, Russia, Iceland, Finland, and Norway. This week's announcement from Shell that it would abandon Arctic offshore drilling has hovered at the edge of the proceedings. Organizer Niels Andreasen of the Institute of the North asked for a moment of silence Monday morning to recognize the complexities of operating in the region. But he says it doesn't change a basic reality.
This is still the decade of the Arctic. Whether Shell is here or not, I think you had President Obama in the state for a reason, and an attention to the Arctic by the U.S. that we've never seen before. And I don't think that's going away.
The conference has brought together representatives from major oil and gas producers like Shell and ExxonMobil, along with those exploring wind, solar, hydro, and geothermal energy in the region. Andreasen says in the Arctic, fossil fuels and renewables aren't in competition. Instead, they're often interdependent as states, countries, and companies use revenue from oil and gas to invest in alternative energy.
That's the model in the Arctic, is taking a non-renewable resource and turning it into renewable.
One place many at the conference would like to see that kind of investment is in remote communities that currently rely almost exclusively on diesel. Fuel prices haven't dropped in many villages, and climate change is exacerbating that old problem in new ways, says Sonny Adams, the director of alternative energy for NANA, the regional native corporation based in Kotzebue.
What happened is because of climate change, we're not getting the normal snowfall that we used to get in the past, which means you're getting more shallow rivers. So the fuel bar just can't make it up there. So we're having to fly in fuel. And whenever you're flying in fuel, it could add like $2 per gallon to the cost of fuel.
Adam says NANA is exploring the potential of everything from hydropower to biodiesel to wind farms to bring down the cost of energy in the region. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a glacial outburst paints the water near Petersburg.
This is amazing, this turquoise color all the way, both ends, as far as we can see on Frederick Sound. It's very unusual.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. The Medallion Foundation and Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Alaska lawmakers are grappling with an exploding prison population that has grown by 27% over the last decade. Since May, lawmakers have been working with the Pew Charitable Trust on justice system reforms and have tasked a criminal justice commission with bringing recommendations forward by December. The $240 million Goose Creek prison has only been in operation for 3 years, but today on APRN's statewide call-in program, Talk of Alaska, Fairbanks Republican Senator John Coghill said the Department of Corrections budget last year was $327 million and DOC is running out of inmate space.
And we know that if we keep this trajectory, we're going to have to build another prison. It should be on the drawing board right now. So we're in a little bit of a time crunch on looking for the best practices. One of the reasons we invited Pew Foundation up here, and it's a bipartisan effort.
Pew has been working on justice reforms across the nation for decades. They require a bipartisan approach from all three branches of state government. Zoe Towns, the Alaska program manager for Pew, says after years of incarceration increases, states that are reforming their criminal justice systems are seeing plateaus or decreases in their prison populations. For example, Pew has worked with the state of Texas for a decade. Towns says Texas was looking at adding another 17,000 prison beds in the next 10 years, but they decided instead to try a new approach and invested in policy reforms.
And also make a pretty unprecedented investment into mental health programs and drug treatment programs, alternatives that judges and parole board could use to sanction offenders and to hold offenders accountable that didn't necessarily mean long prison terms. And what we've seen now in the intervening years is Texas's prison population actually stopped growing and began to decline.
She says Texas has closed three prisons and has seen a decrease in crime rates. Jeff Jesse is the CEO of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. The organization advocates for improving public policy. He says the authority grants about $20 million per year to try to improve service for mental health, substance abuse disorders, and traumatic brain injuries.
60% of the inmates in the Department of Corrections are trust beneficiaries. They not only tend to serve longer sentences, but they recidivate at a higher rate. So we're very excited about working with both Senator Coghill and the Pew Charitable Trust Program, because we are also a data-driven organization that's looking to turn the curve on these problems.
Jesse says people re-entering society need three things: safe, affordable housing, good employment, and support for recovery from substance abuse or help addressing mental health concerns. Senator Coghill says tribal courts can also do more. He says he'll work in the next session to allow tribal courts to handle more problems in their communities.
One of the other things that they can do restorative justice in a way that we have a hard time doing in other courts. Many magistrates have been able to work, I think, up here in the interior. The Tanana chiefs have worked well with the court system here on tribal diversions. We're going to try to codify that so that these things actually can help change the way we're doing things in both in communities and in our jail system.
Senator Coghill sponsored Senate Bill 91, an omnibus justice reform bill. The recommendations of the Criminal Justice Commission will help shape the legislation in the 2016 legislative session. The public's help is being sought to find a Fairbanks man who went missing off the Dalton Highway 3 weeks ago. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, 23-year-old Dalton Hansen disappeared while on a moose hunting trip.
The official search for Dalton Hansen ended September 18th, following what Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Beth Ipson describes as a multifaceted effort.
Alaska Wilderness Search and Rescue Team, MATSAR, PAWS, Search and Rescue, dogs, VPSOs, Alaska State Troopers, and Alaska Wildlife Troopers. They were in, you know, on foot, on Argos, in some pretty treacherous terrain, and the weather really didn't cooperate. There was rain, there was sleet, there was snow. When troopers were able, they flew the area in both helicopters and Super Cubs, but we didn't find anything, even a clue to where Hansen disappeared to.
Hansen's mother, Randy Van Blarkum, says her son disappeared September 10th while four-wheeling to a family hunting cabin about 10 miles off the Dalton Highway near milepost 9. She says her son was traveling with his stepdad and they got into an argument about how to drive the ATVs, and her son walked away without a gun or survival gear.
He was going off for a cool-off moment and just never came back.
Van Blarkum says her husband has been cleared of any wrongdoing, and she does not believe her son killed himself. She adds that troopers have also dispelled the possible involvement of other hunters in the area. She says the extensive search covered a lot of treacherous terrain, including cliffs where her son could have fallen or places he might have gone.
You know, the water source, the tree stands, any place that we feel that he might have reached out to knowing that somebody would find him there. There are no footprints. There's no tracks. We've been in contact with every trucker from Valdez to Prudhoe Bay. Nobody's seen him. And we're just kind of trying to make plan B here so we can bring him home.
She says family and friends plan to return to the area on snow machines as soon as weather conditions improve, and ask that anyone who wants to help make a donation to the Dalton Hansen Search Fund at the Mac Federal Credit Union. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
It has been snowing on and off in many parts of Anchorage this evening, and the National Weather Service says more is on the way. Meteorologist Dave Snyder says even though snow is coming down, there shouldn't be any ice on the roads for tonight's commute.
As we go into the evening hours, we expect to see a little more snow, up to 1 to 2 inches of snow in the lower elevations, which could include some of the main roadways. Most of that's going to happen overnight, and that looks a little bit heavier at some points during the overnight hour. So people may wake up to a little bit of light, slushy snow.
Snyder says 2 to 4 inches of accumulating snow is possible in Eagle River and on the hillside overnight. But a lot more snow is likely for much of interior Alaska, including Fairbanks.
For the Fairbanks region specifically, storm total accumulations could reach as high as 7 to 14 inches. So it'll be heaviest north and west of Fairbanks.
Snyder says in Anchorage, the first snowfall usually arrives around mid-October. He says this storm snow isn't likely to stick around long. It will be cold and blustery on Wednesday, but then warmer and rainy later in the week.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Rural CAP commemorates 50 years of delivering early childhood education programs like Head Start and Parents as Teachers. Signature housing programs, including weatherization, self-help housing, and permanent affordable housing, make a difference in our communities. AmeriCorps members and elder mentors have positive impacts to education, health, and the environment. Learn more at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
The final cruise ships of the season left Alaska waters last week. About a million passengers from around the world sailed through Southeast's Inside Passage. Some continued on to Whittier, Kodiak, and even Unalaska. The overall numbers are around the same as the previous 2 years, but destinations and businesses saw some change. Coast Alaska reporters in Juneau, Ketchikan, Petersburg, and Sitka asked local operators and managers about the season. Ed Schoenfeld wraps it up.
If you want to see tourists in action, Juneau's Mendenhall Glacier is the place to go. About half the state's million cruise ship visitors came to view the rock-strewn ice this season, significantly more than the previous year. All those people presented a challenge when glacial outburst floods called yokolups raised the level of Mendenhall Lake. Yokolups happen when ice dams float or break, allowing a rapid escape of water. They've usually happened only once per season.
Last year, for the first time, we had two of them in one year, and then this year they turned out to be weekly, and it just caught us all by surprise.
That's John Neary. He's director of the U.S. Forest Service's Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. He says the floods hit the area's most popular trail. It follows the lake shoreline to the base of a large, dramatic waterfall.
As soon as the water level goes up, which it did about weekly, we'd have to close the trail, not just to prevent wet feet, but actually to prevent the people who are going around making side trails.
He says those side trails can damage the shore and disrupt nesting seabirds. It was also a busy season for a Ketchikan attraction that puts tourists on a modified deadliest catch crabber. Here's what it sounds like in a promotional video.
We're going to haul king crab pot. We're going to haul a snow crab pot. We baited up hooks to catch fish. We've got prawn pots, Dungeness crab pots, octopus pots.
This season was a lot busier than it was last year. There were a lot more cruise ship passengers coming up, so we had a lot more guests with the potential to sell to.
Shauna Lee is executive director of the Bering Sea Crab Fisherman's Tour. She says the summer's unusually good weather helped draw customers until the back end of the season.
It wasn't terribly bad. No, that's a complete lie. We've had some really horrific days. But the beginning of the season put everybody in a good mood, and a lot more guests coming into town certainly helped a lot as well.
She says the summer's tours sold out months in advance. In fact, it was the best season in the company's history.
I felt like people had money to spend. They were happy to spend it. They were happy to be on vacation and not stressing.
We had more customers, and probably more importantly, we had more customers wanting to do longer, more expensive tours.
That's John Dunlap, vice president for Allen Marine Tours. The Sitka-based company runs sightseeing and wildlife watching catamarans in Ketchikan and Juneau, as well as its hometown. He says people were willing to spend more money this season because the nation's economy is improved. That contrasts to late last decade, when fewer tourists sailed north, and those who did spent less. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
An explosive outburst of flooding from the Baird Glacier near Petersburg last week caused turquoise green water to spread into nearby Frederick Sound and the Wrangell Narrows. It's something that residents hadn't seen before. KFSK's Angela Denning reports.
When 83-year-old Paul Bowen was out hand trolling near Petersburg and noticed green water, he knew something was happening.
This is amazing, this turquoise color all the way both ends, as far as we can see on Frederick Sound. It's very unusual.
He knew the color was from fine particulates mixed with fresh glacier water that were releasing into the sea. Bowen has been paying attention to the Baird Glacier for decades. He was a high school geology teacher for about 35 years and regularly took students by boat to study the glacier. He's seen outburst flooding before, also known as eucalypts. The last time was 1991, but it wasn't this extreme. It went pretty much unnoticed unless you were close to the glacier, where the water was more grayish.
It's very unusual to have this much outwashed color.
Bowen wasn't the only one who saw something odd while out boating. Brad Hunter started to notice small icebergs in Frederick Sound north of Petersburg. They were a little too far north to be from nearby LeConte Glacier. Hunter works for the U.S. Forest Service, and he and another worker were on their way to Thomas Bay to check on a trail there. He saw more icebergs than usual and silty water, so they decided to check out Baird Glacier.
And as we got closer, we started seeing there was a stronger current, and then also started seeing choppy water, which there wasn't any wind, so the chop was from this strong current coming off of Baird Glacier.
Hunter knew about outburst flooding, but he had never experienced it himself.
It was very cool.
Hunter had been to the Thomas Bay area many times, but had never seen it like this. It was near low tide, but instead of dry, flat ground, it was surrounded by water. He was about a mile away from the glacier.
There were no landmarks left. Everything was underwater. The current was running so strong, you could not idle in there. At 2,400 RPMs, we were not making any headway. So we shut the motor off, drifted a little bit, and with the GPS, we were able to document that we were floating back out at approximately 5 miles per hour.
Hunter reported the incident to several others at the Forest Service, and the next day flew over the glacier with a couple of other scientists. They noticed that the water was calming, but there were icebergs everywhere. More had calved off into the lake in front of the glacier.
A lot of it's not the blue ice. It's a real dark, kind of a dirty ice that isn't quite as visible as some types of ice are on the water.
As things unfold, the Forest Service is telling local boaters to look out for ice in unusual places. And perhaps advice from the past is also relevant. It's what Petersburg's current geology teacher, Victor Troutman, heard from Paul Bowen 20 years ago.
He said, you know, go over to Baird Glacier. It's a good field trip for geology students, but never do it in the fall. He said there is a lake that forms in the back on the ice, and over time, the lake finally will erode its way through and break the ice dam and then flood the whole area.
And flood the whole area it did. Greenish turquoise water could be seen in the Petersburg area for days. And to an old-timer like Paul Bowen, it's something worth noting.
It's never been this extensive before, so I think it's one of the major outwars we've had in years. Quite an event.
They still have many questions that they'd like answered, such as, what does this mean for the life of the glacier? Will the flood affect unique vegetation that's being studied there? And how might all that fresh green water affect area fish? More flights had been scheduled over the glacier to try to solve at least some of them. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Finally tonight, a correction in a story about human trafficking last night. We reported that an earlier working group was created by former Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. In fact, that working group was convened by the Parnell administration. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Elizabeth Jenkins and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Rachel Waldholtz and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Emily Kwong in Sitka, and Angela Denning and Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
And by
Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at crowleyalaska.com.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.